ओम नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय, ओम अज्ञान्तिमिरन्धस्य ज्ञानाञ्जनशलाकय चक्षुरुन्मीलितं येन तस्मै श्रीगुरवे नमः। श्रीचैतन्यमनोभीष्टं स्थापितं येन भूतले स्वयं रूपकदा मह्यं ददाति स्वपदान्तिकम्। वन्देऽहं श्रीगुरु श्रीयुतः पदकमलं श्रीगुरुन् वैष्णवांश्च श्रीरूपां सागरजातां सहगणा रघुनाथान्वितं तं सजीवं साद्वैतं सावधूतं परिजनासहितं कृष्णचैतन्यदेवं श्रीराधा कृष्णपदान् सहगणा ललिता श्रीविशाखान्वितंश्च। हे कृष्ण करुणा सिंधु दीनबंधु जगत्पते गोपेश गोपिका कांत राधाकांत नमोस्तुते। तप्त कांचन गौरांगी राधे वृंदावरेश्वरी वृषभानुसुते देवि प्रणमामि हरिप्रिये। वंचकल्पतरुभ्यश्च कृपा सिन्धुभ्यैव च पतितानां पावनेभ्यो वैष्णवेभ्यो नमो नमः। जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्तवृन्द। हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे हरे, हरे रामो हरे राम 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 हरे हरे।
हरे कृष्ण। लाइक टू वेलकम ऑल ऑफ यू ऑल टू द लक्ष्मीनारायण फेस्टिवल। वंस इन अ ईयर ऑन सच ओकेजन्स वी एक्चुअली हाईलाइट लॉर्ड लक्ष्मीनारायण मोर देन राधा गोपीनाथ टू वन एक्सटेंट। Otherwise, Lakshminarayan remains quite hidden in the inner section of Radha Gopinath temple. So it's interesting that we're celebrating a festival of Lakshminarayan, which is a very prominent Sri Vaishnava deity. And we're also worshipping Lakshminarayan a lot in the Sri Vaishnava style. But the style in which the aarti happens is a Bengali style, and the place where Lakshminarayan residing and the original, you know, people who are worshipping were Gujaratis, and everybody who worships them are all from all over India, you know, all the pujaris from different sections of India. So I think this festival is like a national integration type of festival, you know, in one sense. So as we are going to spend the next 45 minutes or so discussing about the pastimes of the Lord from the point of view of the mood of the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya and also the mood of Lakshminarayan worship, there are certain very important things that will come up which will help us in our spiritual lives at whatever level that we are practicing, and hopefully some of these things will help you all in your journey. Long back, Ramanuja, who is the founder of the Sri Sampradaya, he went to Jagannath Puri. Jagannath Puri, I'm sure all of you all know, in Orissa, it's a very mystical place. And the worship over there is very different from the worship in South India. So in Jagannath Puri, there is only one system. The system is that there is no system. Absolutely nothing works according to systems in Jagannath Puri. And the pujaris, they serve Jagannath in the way they want, freestyle, you know, and nobody can question them. So one time Ramanujacharya, who was the head of the Sri Sampradaya and who created meticulous systems of worship in Sri Sampradaya, I mean, if you study the systems of, that Ramanujacharya created in Srirangam, it's unbelievable. He had almost 20 sets of people who were doing different services, you know, according to the Varna, according to the ashram, according to the nature of the people, different services were given. So he created a very meticulous system of worship. So now when the same personality, Ramanujacharya, went to Orissa in Jagannath Puri, he found something very weird over there. Jagannath wakes up at any time, he goes to sleep at any time. One time I was in Jagannath Puri at 12 o'clock in the night. And at 12 o'clock in the night also, Jagannath has not gone to sleep. You know, people are waiting in line to have darshan of Jagannath. And outside the temple of Jagannath, the altar is closed because some bhoga was being offered. You know, Jagannath eats at 11 o'clock, 12 o'clock in the night also. He can adjust to Bombay lifestyle a lot, I guess. You know. So when inside bhoga was going on and the altar was closed, and the pujaris were sitting outside, and guess what they were doing? They were sleeping. You know. So it is quite shocking for me, you know, because after seeing the standard of worship of deities, what we are used to. So Ramanujacharya got such a shock when he went over there, you know. God knows what the pujaris were doing that time, you know. So he decided, now I'm going to revamp everything. The whole Jagannath Puri will be revamped according to Shri Vaishnava style. And he said, this style, this, you know, he had a whole system arranged. And decided that he went to sleep in the night. Next day morning, he thought he will start implementing the system. Next day morning, when he got up, he found himself in Andhra Pradesh. Straight transported, Jagannath sent him, you know, overnight. I don't know what flight he sent him by. I don't know if Jet Airways was there or, you know, whatever flights were there at that point of time. But when Ramanujacharya got up the next day morning, he was not in Puri. He was in South India. And then Jagannath came to him in a vision and told him, don't interfere with my pujari style of worship. I like that style. So the first thing that we learn from the whole episode of Ramanujacharya is that there is a relationship between Krishna, between the Lord and his devotees. And what exactly the relationship is, you and me can't understand. Yes, when it comes to an organization, we need to have certain standards of worship and all that. But beyond the standards of worship, there is also a very personal touch to the worship. So what may be acceptable to us, or what may not be acceptable to us, need not necessarily be the right or the wrong way. So the first thing we learn is that we don't judge the devotees for what they do and what they don't do. At our level, we try our best, but then we realize that there are many factors that are beyond us in controlling. So if you go to Lakshminarayan temple and you see some, you know, different things happening, you know, don't worry, you can relax, you know. There is a certain dealings that is going on between Lakshminarayan and the devotees of Lakshminarayan, and things will get set according to that mood. One time when Ramanuja, he was walking in Srirangam, there was a procession of the Lord which was going on. Generally in South Indian temples, almost every day they have processions where the Archavigraha is taken on a palki and across the town, across the city, wherever the deities reside. So there was a procession of Ranganath which was going around the city of Srirangam, and Ramanuja was a part of the procession. He was participating in the procession, and there were thousands of people, you know. And what Ramanuja saw during the procession was something very shocking. He saw that on the other side of the procession, on the other side of the road, there was a man who was very well built, hefty looking man, with an umbrella over his head, and he was holding the umbrella over the head of one very beautiful lady. And he was just staring at that lady constantly. And here a procession is going on, horses, elephants, drums being beaten, brahmanas chanting mantras, you know, puja going on the, you know, palki, so many things going on, and this guy is completely oblivious to the whole thing and doing something else only. Like, just imagine, you know, down Abhishek is going on and big festival is going on, Kirtan is going on, and in some corner one boy and girl are doing some funny things, you know. it's quite stupid. So Ramanuja said, go and call that person and ask him to participate in the festival. So some of the devotees, disciples of Ramanuja, went to that person. That person's name was Kure. His name was Dhanurdas. And they told him that Ramanuja wants to talk to you. Dhanurdas said, tell him I am too busy. I don't have time now. I am looking at the most wonderful thing in creation, you know. This man, the disciples of Ramanuja went and told him. Ramanujacharya personally left that procession and came to this man to find out what's wrong, you know. He said, can't you understand, the procession of the Lord is going on, and in the midst of the procession, why are you staring at this lady? This man, Dhanurdas, he said, I am the worshipper of beauty. And he said, I have seen the most beautiful thing in the entire creation, the eyes of this girl. I am so attracted and mesmerized by the eyes of this girl that I cannot see anything else in this world except this. Ramanujacharya, he was a preacher. So he told him, he asked him, because he understood what it requires to preach to such a person. When somebody talks about beauty, what they are actually talking about is, they are actually wanting to be absorbed in something very high. And here, this man was attracted to mundane beauty. So Ramanujacharya told him, if you are interested in beauty, and if I show you something more beautiful than the eyes of this girl, will you forget her? He said, any time. But I can assure you, there is nothing more beautiful than the eyes of this girl. I have done my research. Dhanurdas seems to have quite an experienced person. He did quite some research. And he told Ramanujacharya, if you show me something more beautiful than the eyes of this girl, I am ready to do anything you say. Ramanujacharya told him, next day morning, you come at this particular time to the temple of Ranganath, I'll show you. And then the next day morning, Dhanurdas sincerely went to the temple of Ranganath and waited outside. Ramanujacharya personally took him into the altar. And if you understand the South Indian temples, there is no light. In Lakshminarayan temple also, there is no light, you know, following the same tradition. Of course, this is a different setup basically, but in whatever it is, there is no light in the temple. And the deities are all black. Most of the deities in South India are all black. So when Dhanurdas went into the temple, he couldn't see anything because the walls were black, there was no light at all, and the deities were also black. Ramanujacharya said, just stand over here and observe. And the pujari, he started doing aarti of the deities. And he was offering the ghee lamp. The fire was burning, and the pujari started offering the fire at the feet of the Lord, and slowly he came to the eyes of the Lord. And as soon as the pujari reached the eyes of the Lord, the fire was glowing and the eyes of the Lord were visible. Ramanujacharya said, now look. And Dhanurdas, when he saw the eyes of the Lord, he literally fainted. Because the beauty in the eyes of the Lord was something that he had never ever noticed before in his life. Dhanurdas was a resident of Srirangam. It's not that he had never come to have darshan of Ranganath before. He had come many times before. But why didn't he notice the beauty of the eyes of the Lord? Because to be able to appreciate divine beauty, you need the blessings of a spiritual master. You need the grace of a pure devotee of the Lord. And when Ramanujacharya actually pointed out to Dhanurdas the eyes of the Lord, along with just pointing out to the eyes, he also gave him the divine vision to be able to behold the beauty in the eyes of the Lord. So, what we really understand is Dhanurdas, he was searching for something higher. And Ramanujacharya gave him that taste. And then eventually Ramanujacharya asks Dhanurdas to surrender his life and serve Lord Ranganath. Dhanurdas agrees, becomes a disciple of Ramanujacharya. And then Ramanujacharya actually gets him married to that same lady. And both of them, husband and wife, now they become really faithful servants of Ranganath and they start serving, they become disciples of Ramanujacharya. At a certain point, Dhanurdas, he becomes so close to Ramanuja that practically all the disciples of Ramanuja who are sannyasis, you know, brahmacharis, who are exalted saints, they start envying Dhanurdas. To the extent that when Ramanujacharya would go to have a bath, he would walk with two people. Dhanurdas would be on one side, and Dasharathi, who was an exalted Brahmana, very high class scholar, he would be on the other side. When Ramanacharya would enter into the water to have a bath, he would hold Dasharathi's hand and he would enter and have a bath. And when he came out of the water, he would hold Dhanurdas's hand and come out. Dhanurdas was, in one sense, a low class person, not really educated, wrestler, powerful looking person. All the disciples of Ramanacharya started thinking, what nonsense is this? How can our spiritual master do that? He is entering holding Brahmana's hand and is coming out holding Shudra's hand. So they wanted to find out what exactly is the mystery behind this. And Ramanacharya realized what's going on in the mind of his disciples. At that point of time, he wanted to show the disciples that externals don't matter, the internal state of the heart matters. So what he did was, he told, the next day morning when the disciples woke up, he actually told them, I want you all to go to the house of Dhanurdas when he is not there and his wife only is there. And I want you all to go and steal jewels from Dhanurdas' wife, from her body. Now these disciples just didn't understand what their guru is saying. But they anyway wanted to follow the instruction of the guru, so they went. And when the wife of Dhanurdas, she came to know that Ramanacharya's disciples have come and they are stealing her jewels, she didn't know how to react. She just lied quiet, still, without moving at all, so that they can take all the jewels. So she was lying on one side and they removed all the jewels on that side of the body. Now naturally the other side is, you know, difficult to reach. So she slowly turned around so that they can rob the jewels on the other side also. And as she turned around, they got scared and they ran away. And a little later, Dhanurdas came back and he saw his wife having only jewels on half side of her body. He said, what's wrong with you? And then she explained the whole story. And Dhanurdas said, if our spiritual master's disciples are robbing jewels from, you know, your body, must be there is definitely a dire need in the ashram, you know. Lack of funds, basically. You know. And essentially, what Dhanurdas said, he started chastising her. He said, you fool, you should have been more careful. You should have allowed them to take all the jewels. And anyway, life went on. Ramanacharya actually had told his disciples to go and peep and see what these people are discussing. When the disciples heard what Dhanurdas and his wife were discussing about the jewels, they were completely shocked. Because one day before, what Ramanacharya had done, he had played a trick on the disciples. What he had done was, when the disciples were sleeping, early in the morning, Ramanacharya went and tore off all their kopins and all their dhotis, you know. And the next day morning, when they went to the rope lines to get their dhoti and kopin, they saw everything was torn. They started blaming each other, they started shouting at each other, and there was a fight over there. And then Ramanacharya told them through this story, just look at the difference between you and Dhanurdas. Dhanurdas is a grahastha, family man, having jewel, having money, having wealth, and you are supposed to be sannyasis, brahmacharis, having nothing literally. But when your kopin and your, you know, garments are torn, you get so worried and so, you know, anxious, fighting with each other. And here Dhanurdas, he has lost his jewels actually, which is really valuable, and he is in such a detached spirit. Essentially, look at the difference between from where he was and where he has come to. He was a person who was attached to mundane beauty, mundane wealth. And from there he has come to a situation where he is attached to divine beauty and is attached to divine wealth of serving a spiritual master. So essentially, a person who is following the principles of devotion, bhakti, he becomes automatically wealthy. And therefore, there is a very beautiful verse in the Niti Shastra which talks about what is the real ornament of a human being. This verse says, Narasya Abharanam Rupam. The ornament of a human is beauty, rupa. So today's society, everybody emphasizes this beauty. That means if a person is best among humans, who is he? He's supposed to be the most beautiful person. Therefore, we have Mr. Universe and Miss Universe. They are not people who are intelligent. They are not people who are, you know, having high character. They are people who are having good mundane beauty. So that means you categorize a person as Mr. Universe or Miss Universe or whatever by external beauty. This verse, this is the first sentence of this verse. Narasya Abharanam Rupam. The verse goes on further, which says, Rupasya Abharanam Gunam. The ornament of a human is beauty. The ornament of beauty of a person who is beautiful is guna. That means he should have good qualities. And then it goes on to say, Gunasya Abharanam Jnanam. That means the beauty of somebody who has good qualities is knowledge. That person should be knowledgeable. It's not just enough to have mundane external beauty. It is important to have good qualities. It is not just enough to have good qualities. You also should have knowledge. And Jnanasya Abharanam Shama. And it's not just enough to have knowledge. You should also have the ability to forgive others for their mistakes. Jnanasya Abharanam Shama. So look at Dhanurdas. From being attracted to mundane rupa, he has reached the stage of Shama. That actually shows what a person can grow to when he actually embraces the path of pure devotional service. External beauty is not really important at all. There is a very interesting section in the Ramayana which is called as Sundarakand. And if you observe the Sundarakand, if you study the Sundarakand, what is Sundar in the Sundarakand? Who is the Sundar in the Sundarakand? Many people say the Sundar in the Sundarakand is Lord Ram, because there is a description of beauty of Lord Ram in that episode. Then there are some people who say that the Sundar in the Sundarakand is Mother Sita, because there is also a description of Sita's beauty in the Sundarakand. It also talks about Sita's good qualities in the Sundarakand. But many acharyas say that the person who is actually Sundar in the Sundarakand is Hanumanji. But if you look at Hanumanji, on an external spirit, he is a monkey. Now how beautiful can a monkey be? You know, you take the most beautiful monkey in the world and you look at the beauty of that monkey, how much inspired will you be, you know, to make him the Mr. Universe or give him some, you know, really important title of beauty? Not really much. Hanumanji, what is the real beauty of Hanumanji? When Hanuman reaches Ashok Vatika, Hanuman, he takes a very small form. He takes a very tiny form and he hides behind a leaf. And Mother Sita is under the tree and Hanuman is on top of the same tree, hiding behind a small leaf. And Sita is almost on the verge of committing suicide. Hanuman starts narrating the Ramayana to Mother Sita. And he narrates the glory of Lord Ram. So Sita can't see him, but she can hear him. This is the mood of a good narrator. A good narrator is one who wants to be heard but does not want to be seen. So Hanumanji, he speaks Ram Katha, he speaks about the glories of Lord Ram, and at a certain point, Sita becomes so enthusiastic. She hears Ram Katha, glories of Lord Ram, and she becomes so inspired that she wants to see who the speaker is. She wants to see who a person is, you know, speaking so wonderfully. This is the quality of a good speaker. That means he is not interested in trying to project himself, but he wants to glorify the Lord, show the beauty of the Lord so much that just by hearing the description of the beauty of the Lord, people want to look at who that fellow is. So when Mother Sita wanted to see who Hanumanji is, who the narrator is, Hanuman jumps down and she looks at him. He has taken a very small form. And as soon as Sita sees Hanuman, she turns her face away from him. She gets scared and she turns her face away. At a much later point in the Ramayana, Sita asks Hanuman about this episode. She says, "The first time you came in front of me, I turned my back towards you. I turned my face away from you. Did you mind what I did? You know, did you feel bad that I turned my face away from you? You know, suppose somebody comes and looks at you and is talking to you, and you turn that side and you talk, or you're, you know, chatting on the mobile or something like that. It feels bad, right?" So Sita is genuinely asking Hanumanji, "Did you feel bad that I turned away from you?" Hanumanji said, "What you did is right." He said, "What was worth hearing you heard, the speaker is not important. So you don't really need to see me, you know. And therefore, the speaker is not worth looking at. You didn't look, that's fine." So Hanumanji, at a certain point, as he was speaking to Mother Sita, so Sita asks Hanumanji, are all the monkeys of Lord Ram's army as small as you? Because the hope that Sita can be rescued is if all the monkeys help Ram to... And look, this monkey is like really tiny in size. So she gets bewildered, how will Ram rescue her with such small monkeys, you know? And then Hanumanji becomes really big in size and shows her, you know, what his vikata rupa is, what his huge form is. And then Sita asks Hanumanji that she gets confused. She asks Hanumanji, you're becoming small, you're becoming big, you're changing size like anything. What is your actual size? Naturally, you know, size changes, keeps changing of a person, you know. You wonder, what is your actual size? Sometimes people have problem in, you know, size of the pant, because the size changes so badly, so fast, you know. You can't decide what is exactly your pant size, you know. So Hanumanji kept changing his size, so Sita asked him, tell me what is your exact size, what is your actual size? So Hanumanji said, my dear mother, my size is small only. That is my actual size. But when it comes to serve the Lord, I can take any size. For the service of the Lord, I can assume any size. And that's what a good devotee is. A good devotee is somebody who doesn't have pride in his actions, but he has pride in using his actions for the right purpose. So Hanumanji, by becoming big, he was not proud of the big size. He knew that he is actually small only. That is his original size. He was happy to be small only. But when it comes to the Lord's service, when there is an important engagement, he doesn't mind becoming big also. So Hanumanji doesn't exhibit false humility. I am always small. I will always remain small only. No problem if Ram's service doesn't happen. But I want to remain humble. You know. So Hanumanji is happy to become big if the need is there. And if there is no need, he is happy to remain small. That's what he is trying to tell Mother Sita. So here in the Sundarakand, when we talk about what is Sundar in the Sundarakand, the Sundar in the Sundarakand is this quality of Hanumanji, where in spite of being such a powerful person, he still remains humble. He still remains hidden. He still remains completely focused on his goal, on his service, and not really interested in showing himself off. One time, there was a devotee named Parashar Bhatta. Parashar Bhatta is a disciple of Ramanujacharya. And he was living in Srirangam. And he asked, who is a Vaishnav? He went and asked Ramanujacharya. So Ramanujacharya told him, you go to Tirupati. And there you meet a devotee whose name is Anantacharya, and ask him this question, he'll give you the answer. So Parashar Bhatta went all the way to one man came to Parashar Bhatta and asked him this question, who is a Vaishnav? And Parashar Bhatta told this man, go to Anantacharya in Tirupati and he'll give you the answer. So this man went all the way to Tirupati. Now from Srirangam to Tirupati is a huge distance. And he went walking that time. So it's practically a few months walk, literally. And he reached Tirupati. And after he reached Tirupati, he got an opportunity to meet Anantacharya. And he asked Anantacharya this question. My dear Anantacharya, please tell me, who is a Vaishnav? Anantacharya told him, I will tell you in some time. There is feast going on. After the feast, I'll tell you. So there were many thousands of people waiting for the feast. So this man went and sat in the line for prasad. Naturally, the prasad line is there, you want to be first, you know. So he went and sat in the first pangat. You know? And when he sat over there, Anantacharya saw him, he said, get up, you sit next, you serve now. And he went and did serving. The second pangat, he went and sat down. Anantacharya saw him, he said, you get up now, you sit in the third one. And like that, every time he would sit, you would make him get up and you would do service, you know, constantly. In our temple, there is a policy that anytime serving team is there, they are fed first only. Otherwise, serving team is in tension, you know. Prasad milega ki nahi baad mein. So, here, Anantacharya did exactly opposite. He kept on delaying him. first row, second row, third, fourth, fifth. And then finally when everybody was over, Anandesha said, okay, you can take prasad. So this went on for 6 months. 6 months, every day he would come to Anantachari to ask this question. And every day he would tell him, we'll speak after the prasad. And every day he would make him do this only. Completely ill-treated him, totally. After 6 months, after doing this, Anantachari, one day he called this fellow and said, you had a question. What question did you have? Can you imagine, you know? If somebody is enthusiastic to ask a question, and he's holding the mic in his hand, you know, and you tell him, after prasad, I'll answer the question. It's a frustrating thing. And here, not one day, 6 months passed like this. After 6 months, Anantachari asked, what is the question? And this person said, I want to know, who is a Vaishnava? And Anantacharya, he replied in four words. He said, a Vaishnava is like a crane. A Vaishnava is like a cock. A Vaishnava is like salt. And a Vaishnava is like you. And he walked away. This man was confused. What is the meaning of this? 6 months I waited, and this person says he's a crane, he's a cog, he's a, you know, he's a salt, and he's you. He was totally confused. He went to Anantacharya and said, please tell me something more. He said, go to Parashar Bhattu, who sent you here, he will tell you. This man went all the way back from Tirupati to Srirangam, you know, and he said, I'm totally confused who this Anantacharya is and why he made me do all these things. He said, what is the meaning of these four things? And then Parashar Bhatta said, this is the meaning of a true Vaishnava. And through this story, Ramanujacharya, the Sri Sampradaya, is teaching us what it means to be a devotee. It is teaching us what is the expectation of somebody who is a good devotee. It is teaching us what we are aspiring to become. Many times when we come into the process of Krishna consciousness, ISKCON has almost become like a factory, you know. When you, first day you come in and you hear one lecture, you are inspired, and then somebody gives you a mala, and then it goes on and on and on, and suddenly you are a 16 rounded devotee wearing kanti mala, and suddenly you get initiated also. But in the process of all this whole factory cycle, we forget to understand what is the product that is expected out. What is the product that is expected as an outcome of practicing the process of bhakti yoga? And that's, these are the four things that is expected from somebody who is a Vaishnava. The first thing Parashar Bhatta says is that a Vaishnava is like a crane. What is the qualification of a crane? The crane has many qualifications. The first qualification of a crane is that it is white. Fully white. That means a Vaishnava is pure. Like a Paramhamsa. Completely clean. And the crane, it stands on one leg. And it is constantly meditating. Its eyes are closed and it's standing on one leg. It almost seems to be like a sage, you know, standing on one leg, meditating like anything. But what is it meditating on? The crane is meditating on the fishes that are passing below, passing by its leg, you know. And the crane doesn't move at all when the small fishes pass. He just allows the small fishes to go on and on and on. The crane waits for a really big fish to pass. And the moment the crane sees a big fish passing, immediately, zoop, the crane goes down and picks up the big fish. Essentially, Parashar Bhatta says that a Vaishnava is like a crane because he ignores all the small fishes. He ignores all the small mundane people of this world. He doesn't bother about them at all. He doesn't associate with them at all. He doesn't focus on them at all. He is waiting for the big fish to come. What is the big fish? Big fish is a great devotee of the Lord. The moment a crane sees a big fish has come, the moment a Vaishnava sees that a great devotee has come, he drops everything else. Zoop! He's there, sitting in the temple hall, hearing Harikatha. That means the moment he sees there is an opportunity which is big for me to hear, absorb myself in the holy names, absorb myself in Krishna Katha, he is like a crane, completely focused, waiting for the SMS to come to inform us of the next Katha, next speaker, next seminar, next, you know, opportunity whenever we have festivals. Why do we have these festivals? Lakshminarayan festival, Radha Gopinath's appearance day, Sunday feast. Why do we have all these festivals every day, Bhagavatam class? These festivals are all big fishes. And all of us are like cranes, you know. Fortunately for us in ISKCON, Prabhupada has created ISKCON in such a way that every day there can be a big fish passing, you know. But many times, there are so many big fishes passing that we forget to catch even one of them. Our life is too busy, you know. We are focusing on all the small fishes and we just completely forget the big fishes. And therefore, Parashar Bhatt says that Vaishnav is like a crane. The Vaishnav is like a hen or a cock. What does a hen do? How does a hen behave? Essentially, a hen or a cock, you may leave it in a garbage bin. It may be in the most dirty area, atmosphere. What does the hen do? It pecks on the ground and picks up only the grains. Picks up the grains, keeps it in its mouth, eats some, and feeds its younger ones grains. That is the quality of a hen. So essentially, what it means is that a Vaishnava is a person who, from the worst situation of life, can learn some jewel-like lessons, can learn some really special understanding about life. From the most bad circumstance, a Vaishnava is somebody who is known as Saragrahi. Saragrahi means a Vaishnava, he focuses on the essence. He doesn't bother about the hundreds of garbage that is there. He focuses on the essence. And what he does is that he not only grabs the essence and relishes it himself, he also shares it with people who are depending on him. He also is happy to share that knowledge with people who are new in the movement, who are wanting to learn, wanting to nourish themselves. That is the quality of a hen. Parashar Bhatt says that Vaishnava is like salt. What is the meaning of salt? That means the quality of salt is that when the salt is present in the food tastes perfect. But if there's too less salt, you can immediately notice. If there's too much salt, you can immediately notice. But when the salt is perfect, you never acknowledge it. Nobody ever says, today salt was perfect. When salt is too much, you say, are, namak jyada tha. Too less, you say, namak jyada, namak kam tha. But you never ever say when the salt is perfect. Salt was perfect today. Never happens. So Vaishnava is like salt. You cannot see him. That means, he adds flavor to life. When a Vaishnava is present in our life, the Vaishnava doesn't show himself too much. He is not trying to overpower your life. He is there in your life and adds flavor to your life. But at the same time, a Vaishnava is not interested in showing himself too much. He adds flavor very sweetly. That means a Vaishnava does not focus on himself. He focuses on adding sweetness in other people's lives. He dissolves himself to add sweetness in other people's lives. And then finally, Parashar Bhatt said, a Vaishnava is like you. What is the meaning of Vaishnava is like you? That means, Anantacharya for 6 months continuously, he insulted this man. 6 months continuously, he tested him, tested his tolerance to the limit. And in spite of being tested so much, in spite of being insulted so much, in spite of being put into so much inconvenience, this man never complained. He remained humble. He remained very focused. And he remained completely absorbed in something higher because he had a desperate inquiry. Essentially, what does that mean? It means that a Vaishnava is one who follows this higher principle of Trinadapi Sunichena, Tarorapi Sahishnunam, Amanina Manadena, Kirtaniya Sadahari. That means a Vaishnava is one who is interested in not focusing on his inconveniences, tolerating all the dualities, all the problems that come into his life, tolerating the complex people that come into his life, and tolerating the bad situations that come into his life. And in spite of all that, he continues remaining humble, and he focuses on giving respect to others and expecting nothing in return. That's what a true Vaishnava is. So, after he heard these four things, this man, he got the answer to his question. Who is a Vaishnava? You know. The reason why I am telling you these stories today is because we need to understand that in addition to worshipping the deities, worshipping the Lord, more important than worshipping the Lord is worshipping the devotee. In understanding how to deal with the devotee. And therefore, no worship, or rather no festival is completed till we celebrate the existence of devotees in our lives. No celebration is completed, no festival is completed till we understand that the essence of the festival is also an opportunity for us to serve the devotees along with serving the Lord. Most of the times we are enthusiastic about serving the Lord, but we don't show that much enthusiasm about serving the devotees of the Lord. And therefore, here is a story that really tells us, from the Lord's point of view, what is important. There is a place in South India which is known as Kanchipuram. And in Kanchipuram, there was a very exalted person, very simple man. And this person was illiterate, but he was a great devotee of the Lord. And he was very much attached to another exalted devotee whose name was Kanchipurna. So Kanchipurna was a very special person because he was a direct pujari of Varadaraj in Kanchipuram. And not just that, he would converse with Varadaraj, he would discuss. So Varadaraj would ask him questions, he would answer, and they were like, you know, very close to each other. All day long, Kanchipurna would be waving the chamar in Varadaraj's temple and hearing and discussing with Varadaraj and serving Varadaraj. So one fine day, this simple man, he came to Kanchipurna and asked him a question. He told him, "My dear Kanchipurna, I have a desire. You talk to the Lord regularly. Please ask the Lord one thing. Ask the Lord that, is it possible for me to go to Vaikuntha ever in my life? Is it ever possible that I reach Vaikuntha?" So Kanchipurna, he said, "Don't worry, I'll ask Varadaraj." And Kanchipurna was, you know, serving Varadaraj. So Varadaraj saw him and he said, "It looks like you have a question today. Please ask me what's in your mind." And Kanchipurna asked. He said, "My question is that, my dear Lord, this particular devotee who is so much having devotion towards you, he wants to know whether he will ever go back to the spiritual world, to the Vaikuntha planets." And immediately the Lord said, "Of course, definitely he will go back. He is such an exalted personality. He will surely go back. And not just that, he is connected to you. Because he is connected to you, he is definitely going to the spiritual world." Kanchipurna became a little ashamed, but he went and told this man that, "You will definitely go back to the spiritual world." Of course, he didn't say, "Because you are connected to me, you know, therefore you are a very fortunate person, you know." He just said that you will go back to the spiritual world because the Lord is very happy with your devotional service. And then the next day, he was doing chamar, he was worshipping the Lord, serving the Lord. He suddenly had a doubt. So something was going on in his mind and the Lord could see it. The Lord said, "You have a question in your mind, ask what you have in your heart, please clarify." And Kanchipurna, very hesitatingly, he said, "My dear Lord, will I also go back to the spiritual world, you know? You told that he will go and everybody else is going, but what about me? Will I go back to the spiritual world?" The Lord looked at him and he said that, "I'm sorry to say, you will not go back to the spiritual world." Kanchipurna became completely bewildered. He said, "My dear Lord, why do you say that? What have I done wrong? Please tell me what I need to do so that I can qualify to go back to the spiritual world." So Varadaraj, he told Kanchipurna that, "You're fanning me, you're doing such wonderful service to me, and in reciprocation I'm talking to you. So you're doing something for me and I'm doing something for you, that's all." And he said, "But as far as coming to the spiritual world is concerned, you can't come. The reason you can't come to the spiritual world is because just serving me is not enough. You all day serve me, but you have done no service to any devotee till now. And therefore, because you have not done any service to any devotee till now, you will never come back to the spiritual world." Kanchipurna dropped the chamar, ran away from the temple, you know. Till now he was serving the Lord personally, you know, thinking that just by serving the Lord he is going back to the spiritual world. And today he gets a new news, you know, that not serving the Lord is just not enough. Serving the devotee is next step. When we come to the process of bhakti yoga, when we come to the process of spiritual life, Krishna consciousness, we are told that Krishna is our Lord, Krishna is our Master, Krishna is everything to us. We're supposed to give our life to Him, we're supposed to serve Him, we're supposed to chant His holy names, we're supposed to worship Him, and 24 hours be conscious of Krishna. But as we spend the number of years in the Krishna consciousness, we have to learn the higher lesson. The higher lesson is that it is not just enough to serve the Lord. More important than serving the Lord for us to go back to the spiritual world is to serve the Vaishnava, serve a devotee also. When Kanchipurana dropped his chamar and he was running, Varadaraya asked him, "Hey, where are you going? You know, you're not doing chamar to me." Kanchipurana, he said, "I'm sorry, I'm going. I need to serve the devotees." And he ran towards a very exalted Vaishnava whose name is Mahapurna. And he served him for 1 year. After serving him for 1 year menially, he came back to Kanchipuram. And then he picked up the chamar and he asked the Lord, "What do you think?" And naturally, the Lord was very pleased with his attitude. Essentially, from the story, we realize a very important principle in spiritual life. Festivals are important because they give us an opportunity to come together so that we can serve the Lord, glorify the Lord, and be attracted to the divine beauty. Spend our time as much as possible with the big fish. But in addition to that, we also have to understand that festivals are an opportunity where we can come and actually serve each other, serve the devotees. And in the process of trying to serve the devotees, we actually end up pleasing the Lord more. Many times, unfortunately, what happens is that we feel we have a direct connection with the Lord and we don't need anything to do and give and take with devotees. And therefore, spiritual life becomes very, very miserable when we allow the lower tendencies to come between us and the devotees of the Lord. I'll end with one story. There was a very exalted person who was the head pujari of the Srirangam temple. Being a head pujari of Srirangam temple is a very, very big thing. And though he was the head pujari of Srirangam temple, somehow he had some, anarthas in his heart, some bad qualities in his heart. And when Ramanujacharya, he was much younger to this man. When Ramanujacharya was appointed as the head of the entire Srirangam temple, this man really got upset. The head pujari really got upset. And he got upset to such an extent that he actually became envious of Ramanujacharya's success. He became envious of Ramanujacharya's glory and fame. And he decided that he is going to kill Ramanujacharya. He invited Ramanujacharya home for prasad. And he told his wife to mix poison in that prasad. And he told his wife that he should feed Ramanujacharya. He had some other service that came up, so he couldn't be there at his home. Ramanujacharya came and his wife began to serve. And as the wife began to serve food on Ramanujacharya's plate, her hands were shivering, literally, because she knew Ramanujacharya is such an exalted person. But in spite of that, she was trying to serve him poison. Her hands were shivering, literally. At a certain point, she couldn't handle it and she told Ramanujacharya, "Don't eat this, this is poison." Ramanujacharya, he was shocked completely. He got up and he just walked away. But he was very, very hurt, thinking that how can a Vaishnava want to kill another Vaishnava, want to destroy another Vaishnava. And then eventually, at a certain point, this pujari, he realized that that first plan had flopped. He decided he'll do something again. Ramanujacharya went to have darshan of Ranganath, the deities. When he went to have darshan Ranganath, this pujari was standing with a charanamrit vessel. And in the charanamrit of the Lord, he mixed poison. Can you imagine, to what extent envy can go? In the charanamrit of the Lord, he mixed poison. And he waited for Ramanujacharya to come. And when Ramanujacharya came, he extended his hand. And this pujari, he was serving charanamrit to Ramanujacharya. He was in great fear, and naturally if he gets caught and all that. But Ramanujacharya knew what was there in the charanamrit. He actually offered, mentally, he offered a prayer and he drank the charanamrit. As soon as Ramanujacharya drank the charanamrit, the poison was so intensely heavy that immediately the pujari knew something was going to happen. And Ramanujacharya started sweating. His limbs started trembling. Practically every hair on his body was standing on its end. This man was thinking that this is the symptoms of his death. Ramanujara turned around and he was walking away. And that's when this pujari realized these symptoms that he saw were not the symptoms of the poison acting, but they were symptoms of ecstasy. Ramanujara drank Charanamrit, which was filled with poison, but the poison didn't act on him at all. Because he carried no hatred towards this pujari in his heart, and he actually considered this to be Charanamrita of the Lord, it's completely pure, and Charanamrita didn't act on him negatively. Of course, from a higher point of view, we see Ramanujacharya is Anantashesh. Anantashesh in the spiritual world. Now, what can one poison affect, you know, the snake which is like, you know, Anantashesh? And when this pujari, he saw this happening to Ramanujacharya, he fell at Ramanujacharya's feet, he started hitting his head on the floor, thinking that he has done such an offense towards such a pure devotee of the Lord. And actually eventually became a disciple of Ramanujacharya. In a sense, this story teaches us a very important principle that we need to remember. Temple is there, festivals are there, opportunities to serve the deities are there. But many times, when we don't understand and we forget this fact that between us and the deities is a devotee. The connection between us and Krishna is through the medium of devotees. And if you don't understand that and you forget that, and we become envious of the devotees, no matter how many festivals we attend, no matter how many glasses of Charanamrita you drink, bottles of Charanamrita you drink, no matter how much prasad we eat, and no matter how much chanting we do, if we become envious of the devotees of the Lord, there is no hope for us. And therefore, the understanding that we need to carry in our heart is that worship of the Lord is incomplete without worship of the devotees. And the greatest opportunity for us is that the devotees come actually and give us the ability to see the Lord. And therefore, the example is given of a telescope. For us to see Krishna, Krishna is very far away. He may be standing on the altar close to us, and we may be able to capture him on a camera. But actually, from our vision, Krishna is very far away. To be able to see Krishna who is so far away, what we need essentially is that we need divine vision. And for that, we need a telescope. And in a telescope, there are two glasses. One is in the end and one is in the beginning. But for us to be able to see a far off object, we need many lenses in between. It is explained, the more number of lenses in between the first two glasses, the more further we can see actually. And therefore, the lenses represent devotees of the Lord. So for us to be able to see Krishna properly, many times we think that we don't need anybody in between. Me and Krishna, that's it. Actually, it's not. That's not how it is. We need many lenses in between. In fact, just one lens is not enough. It's not just one, me, Guru and Krishna. We need many lenses in between. And the more lenses we have in between, the more clear is our vision of Krishna, the more clear we can see the Lord. Fortunately for us in Radha Gopinath temple, we have such amazing devotees and we have such illustrious devotees who keep coming here. And they act as lenses that help us see Krishna in a much better way. Lakshminarayan festival is actually an opportunity for us to be able to thank all these Vaishnavas for coming into our life and acting as lenses to be able to see Krishna, see Lakshminarayan and perceive the festival in a much better way. Thank you very much. Hare Krishna.